This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
All right, and welcome into another stellar, fantastic, great edition of The Blitz on your Monday morning, 5 after 10. Chance Collins, Charlie Collier with you for the next 2 hours. Talk a little sports, among other things in the news world. Great day outside, though. Feels good. Feels good to be back from vacation. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you to Will. Also, thank you to GP3 holding it down.
Ryan, shout out Ryan.
Ryan, too, as well, on Thursday and Friday of Talk Sports. He held it down in here in the Fan Run studios for us. Really proud of you guys. You guys did good, too, by the way. Listen to you guys a couple days while I was on vacation. Got to call in that Thursday. Charlie really came into your own all week. I'm very proud of you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, man. You did a great job.
How are you doing? First Monday back from vacation. I feel like that's always a tough Monday.
Yeah, it's kind of tough because I feel like my vacation, I mean, yes, obviously just ended yesterday, but I got back. Okay, so I landed back Saturday afternoon, and when I got back Saturday, went immediately to the lake up at Cherokee Lake.
Ooh.
So I went there and stayed there for the weekend with the girlfriend's parents. That was fun. Did a little camping. More or less like glamping, and then went out in the boat. That was a lot of fun too. Did a little bit of some water sports the last 2 days. It was choppy though. Saturday we got on the lake, very choppy, and a mistake.
Weird.
Yeah, it was really weird too. We actually left early off of the water because not only was I getting sick, but her dad was getting sick too.
I've never heard of a lake being like overly choppy.
Yeah, it was bad. It was rough waters that day. It happens. It was really bad. The weather was supposed to, it was actually flip-flop. The weather was supposed to be a lot worse yesterday, and then we got the best weather, and it was supposed to be better on Saturday. But in the end, it all worked out. But I did learn a lesson during vacation, and I think this was why I didn't feel as well. Also, man, when you have an early flight, it is not ideal to go out the night before and really tie one on, because the elevation, getting up 35,000 feet, and just the early flight in itself, not getting a lot of sleep, and then I immediately went to the lake and got on the water where it's very choppy and rough waters that day. I was sick, man. I am not afraid to tell everybody listening that I was feeling bad. It was like I was on a deep sea charter. Seriously, that's how it felt. And I know that's not how it was, but I had the face, like every little like just wake was just making me feel like I was gonna go overboard and just let everything hang out. Let the chopper spray, and the chopper spray was my guts. So I learned my lesson on that. The next time I have a really early flight, I'm definitely going to ease into the night and not try to go, you know, like I'm 21. Cause that hurt me. That's probably the worst I've felt in a long time. I literally
worse than a birthday. The other
yeah, month? Oh yeah, birthday. I was fine. Like I said, I was more tired after my birthday that Monday. Whenever because I said I wasn't gonna come in the day after my birthday, or that Tuesday, and I was more tired from staying out late, not from the drinking. But you know, I talked to some people. They're like, yeah, man. If you tie one on like that, then you get on a plane, you start flying, especially if you got an early flight like that. It's just like your equilibrium can't get
settled.
It's awful.
It is awful.
It was bad. It was really bad. It's the worst I've ever felt in a very long time. I was like, man, am I 21 again? Like, what is going on? I felt like I was 18, 19. I immediately got off the plane, went home for a little bit, took a nap, and then, like I said, we went straight up to the lake. And when I got out there, first is okay. Ate a little bit, tried to settle my stomach. Then we got out there, and just the rocking of the boat, I was done for.
I've absolutely been there.
Yeah.
Taking like a 6 a.m. flight down to Florida when my brother was playing college football.
So they say it's the elevation that does it to you. Your body's not ready for that. It's not meant for that. And I see why now. It definitely was tough on me. I'm telling you, man, I felt all.
I don't think you've been clear enough. So just one more time. You weren't feeling good?
All full.
Not good?
Awful. We'll never make that mistake again. But nonetheless, it was a great weekend.
Besides your stomach hurting, though.
I had a great trip.
What was the best thing about
Highlights
Tampa?
Of my trip?
Yeah, highlight.
I'm a big foodie, so trying out a bunch of the different local restaurants, whether it be in Tampa. And we were more in St. Pete most of the time because my friend actually lives in downtown St. Pete with his wife. So we ventured, 20 minutes to Tampa a lot, back and forth, because Tampa, next biggest city, and that's where a lot of things happen. But it was St. Pete. But St. Pete's really nice downtown, too. I mean, they have an amazing pier that overlooks the bay that they had just built, and we got a chance to go up there. I mean, it's huge. It's like 10 stories, this pier is, with this beautiful view. And then I got to eat a lot of local independent restaurants, a lot of local fresh seafood. That was great because I'm a big foodie, coming from the hospitality industry, being a chef at one point. My biggest highlight was eating all the different food.
Did you go to the Getaway?
The Getaway, I did not. I wanted to. That's the one that the fisherman owns, right?
I don't know. That was the one I was telling you about when I stopped in St. Pete for lunch.
Yeah, somebody else told me about that one too. Now I went to this place called Dat's that was amazing, and I had it was a burger that Shaquille O'Neal ate during the Super Bowl last year in Tampa. And it was a burger, Charlie.
Was it Shaq approved?
Dude, it was huge. And the guy who was waiting on us, the bartender, he even told me, he's like, yeah, Shaq ate this burger last year on Good Morning America for the Super Bowl when they were talking to him. And it was the only burger that he could eat that looked like a normal burger inside his hands. This burger did not look like a normal burger inside my hands. It had fried macaroni and cheese as the buns.
Oh, my.
Yes. Yes. There was no bread. It had two patties of fried macaroni and cheese serving as your buns. It was like a double patty, bacon, cheese, the works, and I was able to eat maybe half of it. I ate like a quarter of it. So that was one of the highlights of and God. Then, like I told you, went to a couple different spots. I learned this new game, this yard pong, which is with the trash cans, where we just ran some people, and that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, though. I had a good time. I missed being back in the studio. It's good to be back. Great weekend for us with sports. We had no disappointments. Whoa. Outside of the disappointment that happened,
that's the only thing that mattered, though.
That is the biggest headlines for us here in Knoxville. Tennessee goes down in their first game in Omaha. The Oma Vols go down to Virginia 6-0.
I'm just glad
shut out.
Glad that we could talk about St. Petersburg for 14 minutes and avoid having to get into that.
Yeah,
just a little bit longer.
I tried to stall it as much as I could. So things are not well on Rocky Top for most of our fans. Some people are a little worried. I would say some people are a little worried. You lose that first game, that's a big bummer, especially with the way the Vols got into this thing. The hot streaking Diamond Vols really put up the numbers on the offensive side. And that's something that, I was worried about playing in this big ballpark. Was it going to be something that was going to hold them back with the way the offense had been? But, I mean, they just couldn't get anything going. It was all about Andrew Abbott and the Cavaliers. 865-546-8200. Let's go ahead and take a quick timeout, Charlie. Let's come back. Let's go ahead and break it down. We're going to have to. I know it's going to be tough, but let's go ahead and get into this Vols first game at Omaha yesterday. And let's go ahead and talk about it. Hey, you listen to The Blitz right here on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back to the Blitz. Live here on Fan Run Radio, AM 1340, FM 105.7. As always, on your Fan Run Radio app, Chance and Charlie, Chuck and Chance in the AM back with you, breaking down Tennessee, Virginia, in Omaha yesterday. While it was a very, very sad day, the show must go on. 865-546-8200. Let's go ahead and go over to the phones, go over to the Fan Run phone lines. Let's take a call from Philly. I'm sure he's got a lot to talk about Tennessee's loss yesterday in Omaha. Phil, what's up, buddy?
Welcome back, Chancellor.
Hey, how are you?
I hope you had a good vacation.
I did. It was good to step away for a little bit. I haven't been on a vacation in a while, except for like camping a couple days here and there. Like, I haven't been to the beach in a long time, so that was cool.
Well, I'm glad that Chuck took care of the business while he was gone. That's pretty cool.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy.
Guys, was it yesterday, while witness, was that just we're not ready for prime time, or was it a total choke job?
Honestly, Phil, you know, I don't know if you're going to like this answer, but I don't really think it was either of those two things. I think it was just a case of you ran into a good pitcher who had his best stuff working, and he was painting corners. And that's just the way life goes sometimes with baseball, and it does suck. But the best team in baseball, especially more than any other sport, just doesn't always win. And it's unfortunate that you played that kind of game in that kind of moment. But, you know, I don't think it reflects on the team not being ready or being on too big of a stage.
Well, I mean, they had several opportunities to score and didn't do it.
Yeah, you ran into the same problem with leaving runners in scoring position that plagued you all season long. That was certainly a problem. Left on base, Tennessee left 8. That's right, 8 on base in the game.
Did not deliver a hit with a runner in scoring position all day.
And that's what we talked about all season long. That was going to be the X factor for Tennessee to have a long run. They had to eliminate leaving runners stranded. Like, they continue to struggle with leaving runners in scoring position. But I think Charlie's right. I think you ran into a very damn good pitcher. I don't know how much Vol fans knew about Virginia going to the game, but I watched them. They got a pretty good team. I mean, Abbott, obviously we know he allowed no earned runs. He shut him out with the help of Wyatt late with the 3 innings he had. But he also had 10 strikeouts, only 2 walks, gave up 5 hits. I mean, Charlie's exactly right. You just ran into a pitcher that definitely had a great day.
Yeah, that's true.
And that can happen in baseball a lot. We've seen it. When we've seen great teams, then you run into a pitcher that just has a dominating performance. I didn't like it that, you know, Vols couldn't – you got multiple hits from only one guy on the day, Pete Durkee, the DH. He's the only guy with multiple hits. And then the rest of the way was a couple guys with one hit, and then a lot of guys who got shut out for the day and just couldn't find it.
Well, if they get swept, though, it'll be a bad, taste in your mouth when you go into the thing.
Yeah, it'll be a bad taste in your mouth, but as somebody, I don't know if you expected them to get here, Phil. I don't think it's disappointing on the year. I mean, for them to still make it to Omaha, win 50 games.
It would be an upsetting end, and you would probably be pretty disappointed for a couple weeks, but then when you reflected upon the season and the long
run.
That's
what I'm saying, the season,
you know, I'd say that
be
you could probably be pretty pleased with the overall result, that it's a pretty positive step in the right direction for what Tony Vitello is building, but I don't think we're going to get swept. We still got a lot of baseball left. It's double loss elimination for a reason.
Well, Texas won't be no easy game.
Yeah, no, that'll be a tough one too. And
probably in the same boat we're at right now, sitting there thinking, you know, what happened to our offense yesterday? They struck out over 20 times in 9 innings against Mississippi State last night.
Well, I say that Mississippi State pitcher is going to be a first round draft pick.
He certainly had a good night. His stuff isn't really crazy. I mean, his spin rate's pretty good, but his fastball is like 91 to 94. He's a smart pitcher, and he's good at pitching guys backwards and hitting the spots. And last night he was excellent.
Yeah, Will Bednar, he threw 6 shutout innings and struck out 15, and then his counterpart came in and closed the door, striking out 6, Landon Sims. Yeah, they struck out a record-breaking 21 Longhorn batters to set a College World Series record.
Good Lord, that's unbelievable. But
that's a buzzsaw.
UT.
Yeah.
UT versus UT. When's the last, have we ever played Texas in baseball?
I'd have to look that up. I'm really not sure off the top of my head, Phil.
Wait, did you ask if we've ever played in baseball?
Yeah.
I think we've played twice in the 110 years we've been playing baseball. And I don't think either have been recent.
It's really amazing, though. We haven't played them in football since 1969, and we don't play them in basketball much. We played them, two or three times in basketball. So I don't understand why, that'd all be a series. It'd all be very attractive.
I would love to have that series in football and in basketball and in baseball. I mean, I think a rivalry with old fake UT down in the Southwest could be pretty fun. It was kind of interesting. Virginia, obviously we played yesterday, who's been playing baseball since the 1800s too. That was the first time we've ever played them, and both of us have been playing baseball for over 100 years.
Hmm. Yeah, especially since it's a bordering state.
Yeah.
But Tony V, so we're going to have to pay $2 million to keep him. If they got to pay $2 million, I don't think they're not going to fork $2 million out to keep him.
Is that where it's at now? It's changed, huh? We're at the $2 million mark.
That's what these LSU people are saying.
I wouldn't listen to them LSU people, Phil. You know how they are, but I think you are probably going to end up paying them 1.2 to 1.5, somewhere in that range, and I think we will do it.
And he's only making $350 right now, right? I think we looked that up recently.
I've always made $600.
He might be with incentives. I thought we looked it up about a week ago or something. It was around $350.
Yeah, it's like a little over $300,000, I think, but then there are a bunch of bonuses and stuff that come in incentive-based.
I think a lot of contracts all be incentive-based instead of just giving them money for nothing.
Yeah, I agree. I would like to see in the sports world that kind of take a turn a little bit more towards incentive-based contracts.
Well, I think you see it more in college baseball and basketball. It's the football contracts for these SEC coaches and, the Power 5 coaches that are just astronomical, where you would think that those would be more incentive-based laden, so you're not just giving the big money up front.
Yeah, and I see where Tennessee's basketball signee, Jermaine Mashak, won a state championship. I think he was MVP of the tournament out there in California. So
we love to see it.
I think people are sleeping on Mashak a little bit. You look at the big names like Kennedy Chandler and Hatfield and Adu and everything else, but I really like Mashak as a really good two-way guy.
Well, we need a lockdown defender, too, and on our current roster, who's the lockdown defender? You're going to put him unless it's him.
Huh. That's a good question.
I mean, maybe Triple J. He's a pretty good defender.
Yeah, he does. He's probably the best one that we have right now when you're looking at it. I mean, before you would say your best one was, I guess, one of the two freshmen who left was one of your best defenders.
It'll be interesting just with Pons gone, because even on games where he wasn't blocking a ton of shots,
and
he
Pons,
just affected so many shots because guys wouldn't just, challenge us in the paint the same way, and he erased a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, well, hopefully everything will work out. I guess we got to beat UT tomorrow. What time is the game? 2:00?
It is at 2:00, Phil.
Hmm. Is that Russell and them going to have a show, or do you know?
I'm not sure.
It'll be on ESPNU as well.
I would think the drive, they may take the day off since everybody will be watching the game. I'm sure they want to watch the game as well and be locked in and just do – maybe they take the day off and they just do a voluntary reaction after the game.
Well, they probably need one. I don't think it's going to work out too well this year, at the end of this year, even though had a good season. I mean, it's the way it is. Tennessee Athletic, guys, choke big time.
Appreciate the call, Phil. 865-546-8200 if you want to voice your opinion like Phil just did. That's the thing I've been hearing, Charlie. A lot of people saying, here's Tennessee doing what Tennessee does once again.
I don't know if it's necessarily fair to say that in this moment. I mean,
Tennessee was
really good this year. I mean, they did perform in the regional and in the super regional and the SEC tournament to an extent, and
Tennessee
it's
doing
double
what?
Loss elimination for a reason. I know that being a Tennessee fan has really jaded, most of us and we really have almost been subconsciously trained not to have optimism at this point, because you oftentimes end up broken the way things have gone. But let's have a little optimism. This team is really good. It's where it's at for a reason. Well coached, a good group of guys. And they have been really good this season with their backs against the wall. It's going to be a tough road, but if there is a team capable of doing it, I mean, Tennessee is one of those teams.
Yeah, they've always answered the call when it seems like you say, they got their backs against the wall in a must-win game. But Tennessee being Tennessee and doing Tennessee things, that would, to me, that would be if they would have got put out in the regional while you're hosting a regional. That would have been like, oh, here's our Tennessee luck.
If we wouldn't have hit that grand slam.
Exactly.
That would have been, yeah.
That would have been Tennessee doing more of Tennessee things. But I'm with you. Yes, if they were to lose tomorrow against Texas, it's going to be very disappointing because we all had high hopes for this team. We all want to see them go on this magnificent, you know, historic run and be able to bring a trophy back to Knoxville. But at the same time, for them to get to Omaha, win the 50 games, and where the program is at the moment and where it looks like the program is going, I think you got to chalk it up as a win. Now, we don't want to do the whole moral victory thing, but
not a moral victory guy, but I mean, yeah, it's a step in, it's another step in what Tony Vitello is building.
It's building
concrete
something.
Evidence that what he's doing is working and that you're continuing to head in the right direction. And again, we still got a long way to go in this baseball season. I got a feeling it's not quite over yet. You got Blade Tidwell on the mound, and he's given up three or more runs in a start, I think just once all year, if you're not going to include the postseason, because he did end up giving up a little bit more to LSU when we extended him just to try to save some arms there at the end. But other than that, he only gave up three or more runs once, and that was UNC Greensboro at the start of the year when he was making one of his first starts as a freshman. He's been excellent this year, and law of averages will tell you a lineup that's been as successful as Tennessee isn't going to fail two games in a row.
Do you think it was a mistake not to go ahead and start Tidwell in the first game?
No, because I think Chad Dallas gave you enough to win. Chad Dallas pitched well enough to win. I mean, he hung one breaking ball at the start of the game. And I mean, it was a little inside, but you know, their batter did a good job seeing it out of the hand and still being able to turn on it. And then, you know, towards the end there, he was laboring a little bit and left a couple of those breaking balls up. But he gave you enough to be able to win, and your offense just didn't capitalize. It just happened to be one of those days.
Yeah, Cheese Dallas, through six innings, the Texas native gave up only one run on five hits. And then, as Charlie said, he was pulled in the game midway through the seventh inning whenever the Cavaliers had their big seventh inning, putting up four on the board. 865-546-8200 is the number. If you want to talk to us, go ahead, take a quick timeout, come back, let's talk about the big moments from the game, what we liked, what we didn't like, and what we can build on playing against Texas tomorrow at 2. This is The Blitz, and this is Fan Run Radio.
Don't get me started, love. I've had too much to drink. Had too much time to think. So leave me alone.
Welcome back to The Blitz, 10:30. Chuck and Chance. Breaking down this Tennessee-Virginia loss yesterday, unfortunately, for Vol fans and for the baseball Vols. But it was a pitching duel that only Tennessee lost in the seventh inning when they gave up a big four-run inning. Andrew Abbott, 10 batters, struck out in six shutout innings. That was the dagger for Tennessee. They just couldn't get the bats going. It was Pete Durkee, only person to record multiple hits. You had Max Ferguson, Jake Rucker, Drew Gilbert, and Connor Pavlone all had one hit apiece. And in Virginia, they continued their hot streak. They only won 36 games on the season, but they hit a streak at the end of the year, and they came up against a hot Tennessee team and brought them back down to earth a little bit. We'll see if the Vols, they've done very well, Charlie, with their backs against the wall. We'll see how this plays. They play with a chip on their shoulder all season long, including in the regionals, super regionals, on their way to Omaha. So I'm with you. I kind of think they'll bounce back. Looks like everybody is kind of, even our own fans, kind of down in the dumps. As Charlie said, a lot of baseball still left to play. Hang your head high. It's not over. But Charlie, what were some of the things that you took away from the game outside of the big pitching performance? What were some of the big moments?
I mean, the first inning was crucial.
Mm-hmm.
The first inning, obviously, Zach Gelof starts it off with a hit for Virginia, but then you do retire the next three guys, and it only takes eight pitches for Chad Dallas. So You get a lot of momentum after that leadoff man gets on, and then you retire the next three.
Then you get two guys on.
And then you follow it up with a Liam Spence walk and a Max Ferguson single to get runners on the corners, nobody out. And it feels like you have the momentum, and you have a chance to really take control of the game early.
Yep.
And
I was out in the lake at that time. They were talking about, you know, Spence, he's great for Tennessee as leadoff. And I think that was his 57th walk on the season compared to, like, 40-something strikeouts. You know, really good plate discipline up there. He gets on, like you say, you get the other big hit and moves him to third. And I'm like, oh, it's easy. This is an easy score. No outs, runners on the corner. And, again, Tennessee coming up short with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, I mean, you have your 3, 4, and 5 up, all of them with a chance to drive in a run. And then from Rucker and Gilbert, all you need to do is just elevate a ball deep enough or just don't hit a ball on the ground that's not hard at the corner. That's mm-hmm. it. If you can do that, you drive in a run, you take that early lead, and that completely changes the entire course of the game. And that was really disappointing, and I feel like that was really deflating. It gave Abbott a ton of confidence because he was struggling a tad bit early. I mean, the first pitch walk, he didn't have that command, and they left one over the plate to Ferguson. And you made him throw a lot of pitches in the first inning and in the second inning,
his
and even in the
third.
His
first five pitches were four balls out of and one strike. You know, he was very shaky.
I mean, yeah, you made him throw those pitches, and I imagine if you jump on him for a run or two there, that game is completely different. You know, Abbott doesn't get that kind of confidence to then, you know, start really challenging with his fastball down. And so it was really unfortunate because it just kind of took the air out of the sails. And then, again, another 8-pitch inning from Chad Dallas captures that momentum back, and you strike out swinging twice, and then you still get that single, and then Pavloni flies out. So you had some early chances to kind of capture the momentum and capture a little bit of control, and you didn't really take advantage. And then, of course, in the third inning, Chad Dallas hangs one high and in. You know, it probably would have been a ball if it wasn't swung at. It was pretty high and in, but with it just hanging the way it did, you know, Logan Michaels was able to recognize that out of the hand, and he did a really good job turning on that pitch. But Chad Dallas, you know, he wasn't super rattled. He bounced back, gives you another chance in the third. And, again, you just can't capitalize. Third inning, a couple strikeouts. Fourth inning, all three guys strike out. You strike out the side. Just felt like every time you got those runners in scoring position, man, it just – you couldn't convert. I mean, obviously, it felt like that because it just – that was what was going on. You load the bases in the fifth. And Tennessee's had, in a lot of the games that they've played, especially against better teams, you know, it feels like they do it in big innings. They don't necessarily, you know, produce a run here, produce a run there, you know, put up one in the third, one in the fifth, you know, two in the sixth, and win, you know, 4-1 or something like that. They like to do a lot of damage at once. And it felt like that was what it was setting up to be in that bottom of the fifth. And you get those bases loaded, or not the bases loaded, but you get the runners on second and third for Liam Spence. And there's no guy you'd rather have at the plate than Liam Spence. He's really good at putting the ball in play. And really, you just needed a ground ball to the right side or a fly ball deep enough to tie this game up. And he, credit to him, I mean, he was all over Abbott that at bat. And he drills one to the second baseman. And unfortunately, he makes a great leaping catch. And you felt like that was a little deflating, obviously.
That one hurt.
But then, you know, you still have Max Ferguson up, and he still has a chance to drive in a run, too. And then he hits one pretty well up the middle. And their shortstop comes across, fields it nicely, and makes a leaping throw over to first just in time. I mean, the Virginia defense was big in some of those big spots, and Tennessee just couldn't really find gaps, couldn't really find the outfield when they needed it. Just was one of those days, unfortunately. And that's when you didn't convert there with Spence and Ferguson up, that's when you really felt like, oh, no, you know, we might be in trouble here. Because, again, if you even just tie the game up there, that completely changes the course of the game. You know, that gives Chad Dallas a little extra juice. It's hard when you're Chad Dallas And you've really only given up one major play all day, and it was just one breaking ball you hung in the second inning. And you are battling. You're quieting this lineup. You're continuing to keep your team in it, you know, all the way through the sixth inning, keeping it at 1-0. And they just keep falling up short. That's hard to continue to go out there as a pitcher and, you know, continue to keep it close, because it really does, you know, deflate you a little bit. But that was just the way it went. Again, really unfortunate.
It was overall a deflating type of afternoon. We're riding this wave, riding the high of Tennessee baseball, only to get defeated by a Virginia team they're not better than Tennessee. They just had a better day.
Yeah, I mean, they have some top, you know, the top of their lineup, they have some talent. Zach Eloff, one of the better hitters in the country. And, Teal, also a really good hitter. Their pitcher yesterday in Abbott, you know, third in the country in strikeouts. And they have a pretty good closer, too. But, you know, top to bottom, Tennessee is a much more talented team. And, again, in baseball, the best team doesn't always win. More than any other sport, there's more parity here in baseball than any other sport. I mean, just look at the MLB. You know, you could have a random Saturday where the Pirates beat the Dodgers by 10.
Do you remember some of those that Marlins team and the Marlins team in the 90s that won with Edgar Renteria, and then they turned around and won later in the early 2000s? Yeah. I mean, like, you're very true on that. Like,
and a lot of it is just, you know, who's hot and you know, who has the hot pitcher on the mound, and just sometimes the breaks go your way. And again, more in baseball than any other sport. Like Texas, for example, the number two national seed, a great offense. They're a team that's rolled through the postseason even better than Tennessee has. And they strike out 21 times.
To set a College World Series
21
record.
Times. Or I think we can all agree, even if, you know, people don't want to hear it, that despite the fact that they're not in the College World Series, Arkansas is the most talented team in the country. They're the best team in the country. And yet here they are. They're not even in the College World Series.
Mm-hmm. Send it home, watch it. Tony V had a lot to say about the performance after the game. One of the biggest things, he said he thought that Vol fans certainly deserved more. He went on to say, I thought there were moments, whether at the plate or on the mound, where we lacked conviction and it cost us a little bit. Let's talk about that. Lacked conviction. I think so. I think he hit it spot on. I mean, of course he knows his guys, but anybody who's watched this team, they weren't aggressive enough at times. They definitely weren't aggressive enough at times and did cost him. He went on to say, towards the end of the game, when the score wasn't the way we wanted, we uncharacteristically rolled over, is not the right word, but we lost our edge a little bit, which has been so beneficial to us. It did look like you say, towards the end of that game, how, you know, you don't score early. You give Abbott a little bit more confidence. I'll say it seems like our guys were a little spooked. Seems like they were a little spooked. They were down on themselves, and that's where we've talked about they've always answered the call whenever their back's against the wall because they have this swagger. Like, you know, like even when you talk about the Wright State game, you were there, like, it just felt like something. When I was watching that game live, it's like, these guys ain't done yet. Like, this feels like something's going to happen. Then you get all the hits, and you get the walk-off grand slam. They didn't have that same swagger late.
You know, Abbott.
The body language.
Abbott. You know, he relies heavily on two pitches. He has a fastball with a lot of arm side run, which, just quick definition, arm side run, you know, whatever side that you throw from. Abbott being a lefty, it kind of tails towards the arm when you throw that fastball because it has a high spin rate. So, you know, he was a left-hander, and he had that arm side run where it was tailing down and into lefties, or, you know, breaking a little bit away or towards you, towards righties. And then he has that circle change that's right around 79 miles an hour that really falls off the table and looks a lot like that fastball out of the hand. And you thought, you know, the first time through the lineup, okay, you know, he's spotting his pitches pretty good. He's doing a really good job, you know, finding the corners and finding the corners down in the zone. He was not leaving fastballs up unless he was intentionally throwing it above the strike zone to try to get you to chase. So you thought, okay, I mean, Tennessee has a good lineup. They have experienced hitters. You know, once they see him once or once they see him twice and you get, you know, through the second time through the order, the third time through the order, they should be able to recognize things better and be more aggressive and jump on him. And Abbott, instead, it felt like, got better the more he saw our order. And he did a really good job changing up his pitch sequence and pitching guys backwards to avoid, you know, any sort of predictability. The catcher, whoever was calling pitches, I don't know who does it for Virginia, whether it's their catcher or whether it's a coach relaying signs from the dugout. But whoever called that game yesterday called a really good game because he kept our hitters off balance all day. You know, he'd start one guy with a changeup breaking down in on the hands. And then, you know, the next at-bat, you're thinking, okay, well, I saw that changeup first. Or the two guys before me, he started with a first-pitch changeup. And then, bam, you got a fastball high and away. And you can't get your hands there in time because maybe you were sitting changeup. I mean, he was really good. And Tennessee didn't capitalize.
Yeah, well, a lot of people.
How it went.
I mean, I noticed, like you say, a lot of people were like, why can't they jump on the fastball? But, I mean, that thing had a lot of movement on it. He was climbing the ladder on people. I mean, he really had our players chasing him, and he had so much command. Like, I know, now I listened to most of the game because I was not in a place where I could watch, but I listened to all of the game outside of the last two innings when I felt like it was over. But he painted the corners constantly too. He just had a lot of command out there, and like you said, as the game went on, he got better, his command got better, and he had more confidence, and Tennessee lost their confidence. And I think that was a big moral of the story in the loss. 865-546-8200, that's the number for the Fan Run Studios phone line. Hey, we'll take a quick break, come back, and do like we always do in the first hour in hour number one with that hockey. Let's do that hockey with Charlie Collier on the other side. Welcome back to the Blitz. Wrapping up hour number one here on your Monday morning. Beautiful day here in Knoxville. At this time, like we always do here during the hockey playoffs, let's go ahead and do that hockey with Charlie Collier. Charlie, take it away.
Let's do that hockey.
Let's do it.
Fun weekend of hockey. Two really good series here as we're getting towards the end. Friday night, game three, your Las Vegas Golden Knights, the Montreal Canadiens. Back in Montreal, I think they upped their crowd a little bit more. And Luke Richardson had to make a surprising debut as an NHL head coach after the Canadiens head coach had some discrepancies with his COVID test. He's symptom-free,
yeah.
So they're hoping that he can be back soon, but he did test positive for COVID. He doesn't think he actually has COVID.
Who actually has it?
I don't know, but he had a really fun game. A really back and forth game. Nobody scores in the first period. And then Roy gets one unassisted for Vegas. And within a minute, the Canadiens bounce right back and get a goal from Caulfield, assisted by Suzuki. So it's tie game going into the third.
And guess what happened?
Petrangelo for the Golden Knights.
My Golden Knights, Charlie. Backs against the wall.
Hold on. We're still talking Friday now. You might want to.
Oh yeah, sorry.
You might want to relax a little bit about your yesterday nights. No,
okay,
but Petrangelo nets one. Anderson matches it, and then we get into overtime yet again. It feels like we've had more overtimes this playoff than ever. I don't really know if that's true, but it certainly feels that way. Anderson scores a tying goal late in the third, and then again in overtime, assisted by Biron and Kotkaniemi.
That's a good pronunciation.
Anderson nets the game winner. The Avalanche win 3-2 and take a 2-1 lead.
The Canadiens, you mean.
Excuse me.
The
I don't
Habs.
Know why I said the Avalanche.
The
yeah.
Habs.
Long weekend.
And then Saturday night.
We'll go ahead and jump to Sunday and pick up game four in this series. So the Canadiens have a 2-1 lead. And they're at home, a chance to take a commanding lead against the heavy, heavy favorite Golden Knights. And they jump out to an early lead. It's Patrick Byron in the second period, 1-0. And they were really controlling the game. They weren't converting on their scoring chances, but they were shutting down the Golden Knights, playing some great defense. And all of a sudden, you were thinking to yourselves, man, are the Canadiens really going to mess around and go to the Stanley Cup? Are they going to mess around and win the Stanley Cup? What is going on? I mean, sure, they came back against the Maple Leafs, but the Maple Leafs always choke. And then, yeah, I guess they beat the Jets and, like, they looked pretty good, but it's the Golden Knights. They're so much better. And yet here they are late in the third leading when McNabb, not Donovan McNabb, different McNabb, scores one for the Golden Knights to tie it up in the third. And we head to yet another overtime.
Braden McNabb.
Where Roy buries one with just a little bit of time left. And really kind of stole that game four on the road. Did not really see that win coming. And it was after the Golden Knights made a really surprising change in net. They went away from Marc-Andre Fleury, who's one of the better goalies in hockey, and instead gave it to Robin Lehner, who gets them the win, makes 27 saves, only gives up one goal. And now they have a really interesting decision. Do they continue to ride Robin Lehner when they get back home, or do they go back to Marc-Andre Fleury? You know, I guess we'll still see there. But that one now down to just a best 2 out of 3 heading to game 5, tied 2-2. Meanwhile, on the other side of the bracket, Saturday night you had the Lightning and the Islanders. The Islanders have won every game 4 so far this playoffs. They were home underdogs, and holy cow, the second period, they go crazy. Bailey, Barzal, and Martin all score within a 15-minute portion of time, within really a 13-minute period, and they take a 3-0 lead. That place is absolutely bonkers, and they have all the momentum in that game. Point and Johnson both get a couple late goals in the third, and they really, the Avalanche try to make it a game, but in front of 14,000 wild Islanders fans, the Islanders hold on to tie that series up 2-2. So both series now have become a best 2 out of 3. Whoever gets to these Stanley Cup finals, it's going to be worn down. It's going to be well-deserved, and I think it's going to give us a pretty fun matchup. But right now, I mean, both of these semifinals, really good. Tonight, get the Islanders and the Lightning at 8 o'clock on NBC Sports Network. Back in Tampa, yep. Lightning money line is minus 185.
Oh, yeah, going to be a good one. The hockey really has been pretty good when you talk about these conference finals here. Even as much flack as I'm giving you about my Golden Knights, it's been some good hockey.
A really fun playoffs. All the way from the first round.
Yeah, up until
now. You've had upsets. You've had overtimes. You've had fights, injuries, gritty performances from unexpected heroes, and, you know, crowds starting to get back into it and really, you know, having their role in things too. Couldn't ask for much more if you're just a casual hockey fan from this playoffs.
Yeah, there is something to be said about playoff hockey with the excitement around it that people always talk about this time of year. Hey, great first hour, Chuck. Great job of doing that hockey. I really did miss that. Hey, hour number 2 coming up next. We'll go ahead and get to some NBA playoff action and talk a little bit of opening drive. This is The Blitz. This is Fan Run Radio.